What's up, superheroes? Thank you so much for joining at the episode 6 of the Hustle Doer Show. So let me ask you a question. Do you find it difficult to find motivation for exercising? Is it something that requires a lot of willpower from you? And does going to the gym is something that you should be doing, but not it's not exactly what you want to be doing? So if you answer to any of these questions, yes, this episode is exactly for you. And why? It's because today I'm chatting with Jonathan Ross, who's two times Personal Trainer of the Year award winner in the United States. And he has a profound understanding on not only how to exercise correctly and, you know, how to make a real impact on your fitness, but also how to make the whole exercising more fun, engaging, and how to make it basically that you really, really want to do that. So stick around, because today we're chatting about things like how to trick your brain in loving the exercise, also how to find motivation for doing other things in general, and also we're going to talk a lot about the core exercises and planking. So if you're planning to do the 21-day planking challenge on hustleduo.com, this episode is exactly for you. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please make sure to subscribe for more. Every Thursday, a new episode with amazing people where we chat about body and mind growth. So enjoy and see ya. Hi, Jonathan, and welcome to the Hustle Doer Show.
Thank you, Taurus. It's an honor to join you.
I think that honor is all mine. So let's start. I think we're going to go and cover a lot of interesting topics today, especially about, you know, core training and abs and planking. What I would love to ask you first is, what's your biggest superpower?
My biggest superpower is the ability to put a smile on someone's face when they're exercising intensely.
That's amazing. That's huge.
It is.
Yeah. You're definitely lucky to have that. And do you think that was always natural to you, or is something that you learned how to do?
No, it's something that I learned. It was a late developing superpower. Mm-hmm. Definitely, because it doesn't come natural to most people to think about putting a smile on your face while you're being intense. But the element of playfulness is something I've found to be an essential component of keeping people into it and having fun and enjoying the process. Means things that we have fun doing, we have an easier time doing consistently. So I found that being able to figure out creative ways to stick a smile on someone's face, even while they're being intense, is really helpful.
That's amazing. That's smart. We're going to talk a little bit later about this new amazing program you created called Funtensity. But before that, a little bit more about you. So I've read, you know, kind of online, you know, about you, that you are a former astronomer. And that was a very fun fact. So how the hell did you end up, you know, being an astronomer and now you're putting a smile on a people's face while they work out?
That's a very good question, because it is probably a very different field from what most people would think of as exercise. And so what I like to say is I used to study stellar bodies. Now I train them. How that happened was in, I think, 10th grade, I was getting – of course, like most kids, I was really into space growing up. And I read Cosmos by Carl Sagan, and it lit a passion for me with space. So I decided in that moment that astronomy was going to be my career. Then I was about, I guess, 2 months from graduating, I think, with my astronomy degree in college, and I realized that kind of the light bulb went off that this wasn't what I wanted to do professionally. It's not that I don't love it. It's just that more of a hobby. It's not what I wanted to do professionally. And so I really didn't know what I wanted to ultimately do professionally. So like a lot of people, I made a decision too early on a major and committed to it way too early, so that life had to kind of show me what I needed to do. And it was really through losing my father. He was 424 pounds, which is almost 200 kilos, when he died in 1995. And that was a year or so after that, the light bulb went off that I wanted to do in fitness as a career. And when I made that decision, when I just thought about fitness as a career, it felt like everything inside just clicked. Everything it just fit together like it never had before when thinking about any other career. So I knew I had made the right choice. So that's how, you know, at 16, when you pick a career, the chances that you're going to pick the best one for you are actually quite small. So I'm a big believer in getting some life experience to help you make a good decision on a career first.
100%, 120%. I agree with this so much. I mean, we are all kind of, you know, the way life works is that we are forced to make these big, amazingly big life decisions at such a young age, and usually influenced by, you know, not us, but, you know, parents or environment or whatever. So that's just totally natural that you decided kind of to switch your major.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. At an age when we can barely keep our bedrooms clean, we're supposed to pick a major. You know, I just think it's fascinating. So I'm like you said, big believer in life experience first to help you make a good decision. So that's how I have an astronomy degree, working in fitness. I'm not sure how many fitness professionals out there have an astronomy degree, but there's got to be at least a couple of us.
Yeah, well, you should, you know, with your knowledge, you should be a celebrity coach, like, you know, you call it stars.
Yeah, well, it's funny too. When I was studying astronomy in college, it wasn't really that popular of a topic. But now Neil deGrasse Tyson has gotten so popular, it's like it's kind of cool to be an astronomer now. So I might start mentioning that a little more.
Yeah, use that card. Use that card. Hashtag astronomer training or something like that. Awesome. So you are also 2 times personal trainer of the year. How did you basically become the best, you know, in at least in the United States?
Well, I think that is because I figured out pretty early on that fitness isn't about the workouts. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a strange thing to say, but it's really about your mindset. It's really about your decision making and the process. And you got to really want to do it. You got to make it part of your life. It can't be something that you're forcing yourself to do. And so even very early on, I think at an intuitive level, before I learned this officially, I was really focused on figuring out what people needed mm-hmm. to help them adopt exercise and integrate it into their life so they weren't forcing themselves to do it. And I think that makes a huge difference, because when you create a desire for doing the right things, people have an easier time following through. And then when they have an easier time following through, they actually get better results and they give you more of the credit, even though it's really the internal change that they were willing to make in themselves which led to those great results. And that's really what it is. It's been the sort of the difference maker in being able to help the people who need our help the most, which is the people that are the farthest away from fitness at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that's really what led to those awards, was being able to develop a consistent pattern of really being able to help the people who were, I guess, difficult to help or harder to reach with the traditional approaches to fitness.
Mm-hmm. All right, that makes sense. So let's talk about this great approach of fun and exercise. So at least for me, I've been doing, you know, a lot of sports all my life, but basically the fitness part, like going to the gym, it just never fit me, because like you said, it just wasn't fun. You know, it was something is just not fun by going there, being there alone for 1 hour, you know, pumping something, some iron, which you don't even know if you're doing it correctly, and so on and so on. So but what I found a lot more fun lately is doing this high intensity interval training in groups, you know, so somehow the groups made it more fun. And now I found finally my own fun. So how do you, what steps do you recommend for people who are lacking fun in sports, you know, for they're thinking of the idea of sports is like, not for me.
Well, that's cool. That's good to know what's not for you. So I would say to these people that, you know, that's really the first thing to just accept. Say, if you figured out something is not a good fit for you, then that's wonderful, because you figured out what you shouldn't be doing. And that's almost just as valuable sometimes as figuring out what you should do, because sometimes the only way to figure out what you will enjoy is keep trying things that you don't enjoy until you find the things that you do. And if going to the gym, you know, if you think about it, going into a gym and actually having a structured exercise and doing a set number of exercises and sets and reps and tracking the rest between the sets and doing X amount of minutes of cardiovascular training at a certain intensity, it's all very abstract. And it seems like we're doing something very mechanical and almost not connected with the natural way that we're meant to move, which is to do things that are involving reactivity and coordination and a lot of different physical skills like agility and balance and power and explosiveness and mobility even has to be at play to move well in the world and do whatever you like. So if you're seeking it, if someone out there listening to this is trying to figure out how to get started, the first thing I would say is make sure you try new things and do not force yourself to do the forms of physical activity that you know you don't like, because those will never serve you well and you'll always be forcing yourself to do them. So if you're dragging yourself into the gym to do a structured exercise plan and you know it's not for you, stop. Do something that actually gets you a little bit excited inside and makes you feel happy when you do it. Even if it's physically challenging, it'll get you fitter, but it also has to be something that you're a bit drawn to, so you're more willing and likely to do it. And so that's the key, is trying a bunch of different things, and it can be different classes in a gym. And like you mentioned, having the group connection and doing high-intensity exercise with other people. That group dynamic is often very valuable to people because you just have that social component and you all kind of suffer together, and it makes it a little more enjoyable than just going in and grunting out under some weights, which that approach is actually fine, but it's not fine if it's not fine for you. So if it works, it's great. It does work, but if the majority of the human population is not best served by that approach to exercise, then we have to offer something else that actually will help people stay with it long term.
Gotcha. So is that the whole purpose of Funtensity, the program you created?
Yeah, because what I found in, I guess, about 10 years now, I've been studying the brain. And what I've found is that the approach that we have to exercise, the traditional approach in fitness, which is we build gyms with really weird looking pieces of equipment and we expect people to go in for a set amount of time and do the sets and reps, it's fine. It will work. But most people don't do it. And a very generous estimate is that 20% of the population has a gym membership or exercises consistently, and that's being a little bit generous. So we're rounding up to 20%. That means the other 80% are not. And what we've been selling as working out, that package of being in a gym with equipment, doing things that are really abstract and not connected to anything meaningful to you, is what we've been selling for 40, 50 years really aggressively. And it's fascinating that we've had a lot of success in the fitness industry, but we haven't reached out to that even that other 80% of the population that's not exercising. So that actually fascinates me. So why are they not coming? So because they're not drawn to stuff. It doesn't speak to them. It doesn't feed their soul. It doesn't make them feel alive inside. And they're doing it because they feel like they should. So it feels like a chore. And when no one's looking, we don't really like to do our chores. So turning things around and saying, well, if we make exercise fun enough to change your mind about exercise, if you have a different emotional response, you can change someone's exercise approach and their attitude, their mindset. You can change their mind in a single workout, but you can't change their body in a single workout. Changing the body takes a little longer. So you focus on the mind first, and then what happens is someone feels a little bit more positive about the experience that they've had, and then they're more likely to show up. So the Funtensity program involves partner training. So there's a group of people and I pair everybody up. We do partner exercises that are challenging. We use some traditional fitness equipment. We use kettlebells. We use medicine balls, plyo boxes, heavy ropes, things like Vipers, the Most Fit Core Hammers, really popular. The Hyperware sand bells are excellent for this type of training, oversized med balls. But I also throw in things like balloons and rubber chickens. So there's an element of playfulness and silliness to it as well. So there's the fun element and there's the intense element. So 20% of people will come for the intensity, 80% of people will come for the fun, but everybody stays for the Funtensity because you get both of those things in a single experience.
Wow, that's great. That sounds like my type of training. I would love to try. Unfortunately, I'm so far away from you. Actually, is there, don't know, do you have some kind of online program as well? How could I benefit from this idea?
Well, the first way anyone can find out more about it is to just go to funtensity.com and read a little bit more about it. There's not a lot of reading on there, but it just gives you a little bit more of an overview. Some of the things I just said will be on there. You can sign up for the e-newsletter. I'm just starting to schedule workshops around the world. Have one coming up in March in New York City. I'll be doing one, I believe, in Thailand in October. So there are other opportunities coming up, and I'm also looking for new locations to go host one so we can do one maybe near you sometime. We can join a workout. So that's it's a 1-day, 6-hour workout that, or 6-hour workshop that is appropriate really for almost anyone. It's geared towards fitness professionals, but even someone who's not a fitness professional could come because there's a lot of brain science in it. It shows you kind of what's going on in addition to doing the workout and then learning a bunch of ways of how to do the types of exercises that I recommend. It also includes a little bit of a look behind the scenes and a look under the hood at why the brain science behind it is like the practical application of brain science. Because brain science and brain health has gotten really hot and it's really popular, but many people find it confusing for how to apply it to the real world. So it's kind of what I've done with this program is to say, okay, well, here's the brain science on willpower and motivation and on brain health for preventing Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And here's a way we can actually use it in high intensity exercise to change people's minds about exercise, how they feel first, make the brain healthier, function better now for decision making, for long term preventing disease, and then it's going to make them more likely to show up often enough to actually change their bodies. So just go to funtensity.com, check it out, and then you can take it from there.
That's interesting. So basically, what you learned is how to trick people into liking exercise. So, but I mean, like you trick their brain in terms of like, or you change their mindset that, you know, what they thought was, you know, I don't know, tiresome and boring and so super hard that I don't want to do it, into something like I'm looking forward to. So motivation, actually, what you just gave me an idea that motivation, a science of motivation, is such a big part of exercising, right? I mean, because without that, you won't start. You won't even start, and start is always the hardest stuff. But also without that, you won't keep going. So could you share us your learnings? I mean, you said, you mentioned that you've mm-hmm. been studying this for 10 years. What, you know, what are the tricks of motivation?
Well, the one thing I've learned, and it was actually a little bit hard for me to accept, I have to admit, at first, is that we make most of our decisions based on emotion. That's mm-hmm. something that, you know, as a trained scientist and studying astronomy and physics and math, and, you know, that's a, it's certainly, there's a lot of value in that study as well. But understanding that we as humans make most of our decisions based on emotion was really an eye-opening experience for me, because you can even look at it as an easy example of why so many people smoke, now that we know incontrovertibly that cigarettes are harmful to the human body. There's no debating that. We don't need more research to settle this, but yet people still do. So there's an emotional component to that for why people start and why they continue. Yes, the addiction is there, but it's more driven by a sense of identity and a sense of who I am and who I am as a person, and wanting to have that emotional connection with mm-hmm. staying true to yourself and who you see yourself as. So for exercise, it's actually been, I guess, something I've had to force myself to change my perspective on, it in that it's not about just the workout. It's about people's mindset and attitude on it. So motivation, it really comes from emotion. So when we say that whatever matters most to you in life, whatever you care about the most, whatever activities you love and things that mean the most to you to do, and whoever you love to do them with, when you do those things in a fit body, you enjoy them more, you're able to put more energy into them, you're able to get more out of them, you're able to have better connections with other people when you do them. And so that makes the emotional benefits of participating in physical activity very high, as opposed to doing it because you feel like you should and it's an obligation, or the doctor is telling you to, or your spouse is telling you to, and you don't enjoy it. So it's a completely different emotional response. So then that helps you develop your internal motivation, because what you'll see is that if you look into the science of motivation, it's pretty clear that negative motivators, like not wanting to be something and being angry and being upset with yourself and thinking you're fat and disgusting, and that might get you started. It might lead mm-hmm. to an initial burst, but because if it stays negative, you tend to not want to do things that make you be in a negative emotional state. So, and powerful negative motivation, or a powerful negative motivator, can get you started. But what ultimately will keep you going is figuring out those internal motivators, those things that make you drawn to the activity, because they're connected with what you really love about life. So when you figure out how what you love about life and who you love in your life can be made better from you exercising, and you put those two things together, and in your own head, you understand that the things that are most important to me get better when I do them in a fit body, it gets mm-hmm. way easier to follow through on physical activity plans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I've been also thinking a lot lately about, you know, this whole concept of negativity and positivity. And actually, you know, what I realized, that you could easily turn the same thing around and make, you know, you could basically make any negative stuff positive, you know. So basically saying that, instead of saying, hey, I'm going to do this because I don't want to be fat, you can say, I'm going to do this because I want to be fit and to be able to, you know, play football with my kids, right? And that's like,
yes.
Yeah. That sounds
like it's opening up your opportunities. You're seeing opportunities in the change rather than what you're running away from. A nice way to explain this to everyone that I've come up with over the years is that if you watch any horror movie, especially a cheesy one from the 1980s, 1990s or something, someone's being chased through the woods by a bad guy. What happens? They're always running and they're looking over their shoulder while they're running. If I'm running this way, but I'm looking this way, I'm going to be more likely to trip and fall, because that's always what happens. Mm-hmm. You know the bad guy's back there. You don't have to focus on that. So where you put your focus is where your energy's going. So then if I'm focusing on getting away, if I'm focusing on the positive and I'm running that way and looking that way, I'll have a much better chance of getting away from the bad guy that's back there. But if I'm focused back there, I'm going to be more likely to trip and fall.
Mm-hmm. And going into the even more philosophical way, the bad guy could be actually that, you know, bad version of you, right? So if you keep looking at that bad version of you and keep looking forward to the, you know, the bright future, that's
true.
That's safe space, you know, where there are no more bad guys. This is where you're gonna get.
It's true. And just one quick thing to add too on that. A lot of times people, especially working in fitness, you tend to run into people sometimes that have this, I guess, perception that we in fitness are always super happy and we're always bouncing off the walls with enthusiasm. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, on some fitness professionals to continually act that way. And the people that tell you they're always happy and always in a good mood are lying to you, because that's really not the true that's not the truth of the human experience. The truth of the human experience is that there's good days and bad days. There's daytime and nighttime. There's sunny days and there's rainy days. There's up times and there's down times. And everything is about that contrast. So knowing that we're going to have days where we don't feel great and we might be feeling a little bit negative and not feeling pressure to get rid of any negative feelings, just sort of know that you're having them. You don't have to let them dominate your thoughts, but just be aware that you're having them and they will pass, and try to just exist while you're having those feelings without acting on them. That's really the key, is say, I'm going to have up times and down times. And if I can survive and ride out those down times, they'll become increasingly more brief because I'll have a better result in my life and in my body, and I'll make better choices. So if I cannot act on the negatives, I'll have a better outcome in my body and be more positive more often. But we're not going to ever eliminate negativity, because it's actually wired into the human brain to be negative. Because if you try to feed a baby new foods, the first reaction is no, because that's what keeps us alive. If we're out in the wild 1,000 years ago and we don't know what all the different foods around us are and if they're safe to eat, the only way we're going to make sure we don't die is if we only eat the things that we know. And we say, no, that's probably dangerous, so I have to not eat it. A lot of people would say, oh, you're being negative, but
be more open-minded.
That's really, that's actually, yes, but that's actually wired into our DNA to be that way. And just kind of knowing when it's best to be that way and when it's actually protecting us and when it's not. More oftentimes in the modern world, it's not really doing us a lot of favors, but not feeling too bad about feeling negative either, I think, is important, because a lot of people put way too much pressure on themselves to feel positive all the time. And then if they feel bad, they compound it and make it worse by actually feeling bad about themselves because they're feeling bad.
Got it. I have one more question, in this sphere, and I apologize for anybody who really expected to talk about abs and planking right away.
We're getting to that. We're getting to
but
that.
We're getting, yeah, exactly. We're getting there. I think the reason why we're even, talking so much about more of the mindset is because it's connected. Come on, exercise, the body health is so much more connected to the mind fitness than people think. So the last question to you, do you meditate?
Sometimes. Sometimes I actively meditate. I'll probably say about once a week, twice a week. Other times I'll do what I would call conscious meditation, where I'm doing something that's relatively mindless, and my body, I've done it enough that I can do it on somewhat autopilot. Like, for example, cooking or doing food prep. That's one time where I love doing it. The tactile sense of touching the food distracts myself from anything else in my mind, or it's just calms you down enough that you're working with your hands. It brings your focus into something, or having even any kind of hobby. I used to maintain 2 aquariums, and I would sometimes sit and look at the fish, and that was a form of meditation for me, because I would kind of lose myself in their world. So I think many people in the modern Western world find it harder to truly just meditate. And if you do, don't feel, again, find forms of somewhat mindless activity where you're not requiring a lot of focus and concentration. So it's something you do a lot, or it's passive, like looking at a fish tank or watching birds go by, or just being out in nature quietly and just listening to the sound of the leaves in the trees and the sounds of nature that you hear all around you, or if there's any running water nearby, or just birds or animals, and just things like that can actually be a form of meditation if you're just letting it all come to you rather than forcing yourself to try to not think about anything, which I think most people find to be very difficult at first. So I'll say 1 to 2 times a week for me, I actually do direct meditation, but other times, more often than not, it's usually a form of kind of active, mindless movement, or whatever you might call it.
Yeah, no, I asked because the last comments you made were very much in line with basically, gratitude and mindfulness that comes from the concept of mindfulness meditation, basically, appreciate, don't dwell on the negative things, whatever it's come, it's going to go away, it's going to pass. So accept the reality and just move on. Great. So let me play the part 2. Sound ding. Now we are in part 2, and and we're gonna finally discuss the abs. So Jonathan, you're the expert. You even wrote the book called Abs Revealed. tell us the basics of having a good core, muscles, and good abs, you know. So what are the basics?
Well, the basics are to make sure that you understand how to move your body. It sounds very basic, because it is. So what that means is, as I move in life, doesn't mean working out yet. It means as I'm doing everything I need to do. It's housework, it's preparing food, it's doing laundry, it's bending over to pick things up. I have to understand that my abs are really what control that. It even has a lot of involvement in walking, running, almost everything you're doing. Your abdominals are kind of working all the time. And if they're working well, they can help you move well. And you don't even really notice them when they work well, because you don't have any pains and you move with high quality movement. You don't injure yourself. When you don't have those things, either from disuse, injury, or bad posture over time, certain things can become weak, while other things become too strong, pulling you out of alignment, and then you maybe notice some problems. So that's when some direct abdominal training is warranted.
Got it. What are the common mistakes? What are the most common mistakes people do when they want to have a good six pack?
They do too much. Usually, I think that's the common mistake that you see most often. People do too much. It used to be too much crunches. Now it's too long doing planks, and it's too much. And so I think there's an overemphasis on certain things. And that's not to say that there's not some benefit and some need to do some direct core training, especially someone who's just starting out. Maybe they have some back pain, don't know why. Maybe they've looked into it, and don't have any back injuries, or maybe just want to start getting in shape. There's a good opportunity there to make sure that we're activating the right muscles, to do some very basic core exercises to start, maybe even just on the floor to start the foundation. Because when we consciously know how to turn on the right muscles, we can then unconsciously turn on the right muscles. And if we've forgotten how to instinctively activate the abdominals when we move, we can then spend a little bit of time activating them on purpose on the floor. And then when we get up and move in life, we're more able to integrate that strength into the rest of the joints. But if we don't really know how to do it, or we've lost the ability to through disuse or bad posture, and then we try to do a full body exercise that uses core strength, it's often very difficult for people. So in the abs revealed approach, what I do is I kind of make it easy for people, where I say rock, paper, scissors. Like, rock is the foundation, where we start with doing exercises on the floor to make sure you're activating the right muscles at the right time. And we focus on the three primary spinal actions, which are flexion and extension and rotation. So we do them independently. And then we get into phase two, which is paper, where we start adding exercises now, where you might be up off the floor, up on a stability ball, using a suspension trainer. And we're focusing again on single spinal actions, but now we're up a little bit, so we're putting more of your body weight into the equation. Then in phase three, the scissors phase of the program, now we're doing the most complicated forms of movement, which is flexion and extension with rotation. So if you're in your car and you reach into your back seat to adjust your kid's pacifier, you kind of turn, so you're extending and rotating at the same time. And what that means for most people is that if they don't do that well, they're going to hurt themselves. And then there's a lot of people that would tell you, oh, it's better to not rotate and flex or extend the spine at the same time. But that's not reality. See, it's important to me that whatever I'm recommending to people has to be grounded in the real world. So if someone says, well, research shows you shouldn't do blank, but it's something that humans do all the time anyway, we have to train it, because if we train it, then we'll be good when life makes us do it. And life's going to make us do things that are not optimal all the time. And that's where having a good core is really beneficial, because life throws things at you. And a good core helps you handle all those things that life throws at you really well, which means you're less likely to get hurt. You're less likely to have someone that you love get hurt, or less likely to have property damage. Like when you go to drop your brand new cell phone, you go to drop it, or you go to catch it right when you drop it before it hits the ground. And if you have a good core, you can go get it quickly. And so you can actually have less property damage and less injury if you have a good core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, damaging the property just reminded me of a story when I was, I think, 16 years old, and I was working as a kind of a delivery boy, you know, in an electronics shop. And once we delivered this super, super heavy TV, you know, flat screen TV, was back in the day, you know, they were definitely a lot heavier than now. And it's like insanely expensive, you know. I would have to work for like 5 years, you know, to for the cost of it. And We were, and we had to go to the fifth floor, and then we were just carrying, you know, there was no elevator, carrying. And at the last step, you know, I remember this, at the last step, you know, I kind of tripped, you know, and that one corner kind of was sliding away from my hand, but luckily I somehow managed to catch it with the other hand. And, you know, the story of the good ending, but I
Oh,
guess the
that's good.
16 years old body muscles, you know, saved me.
It didn't hurt to be young, but you're finding that it's not just youth that'll save you. And I'm glad the story has a happy ending. When you started telling it, I didn't think it was going to have a happy ending. I thought it was going to end with a TV dropping and crashing. But what's interesting especially with youth, because that's an interesting topic with youth and training, is that I've seen a lot of times. This is actually really fascinating from a perspective. From the perspective of someone, like I'm 47 years old, and so I grew up playing outside a lot. I had snowball fights, and I had squirt gun battles, and I played in the street, and I played football and soccer, and I played King of the Hill, which is you stand at the top of the hill and you push other kids down as they try to get up, and if they successfully get up, we played tag. I just can't. I mean, endless things. We did sledding in the winter, so there's just so many things. And then, so now you see that's less common. So I distinctly remember I was teaching a workshop to a bunch of other fitness professionals, and there was approximately 120 people in the room, and it was kind of packed. So I was up on a stage pretty high, and I could see down, and I was showing everybody everything, and I was doing a workout called plyo play, which is plyometric play. It's like playfulness with plyometrics. So there are a lot of things that would be plyometric, but not the traditional plyometric exercises you would see in the gym. Many of the exercises that were in this would be the kind of thing I would use in a Funtensity workout, but they're very non-traditional exercises, but they're also plyometric in nature. And the fascinating thing from my perspective of being able to see the whole room do these things was that just in general, it seemed like the people that were maybe over 30 to 35 were actually doing these exercises a lot more effectively than the people that were younger. And I was like, well, that's just strange because you don't normally see that. But my theory and just educated guess on why is that a lot of people younger, they probably played a sport, and they just played a sport. They may have played tennis, or maybe they did figure skating, or maybe they did gymnastics, and that's really all they did. They didn't do all those other things, because I played a few sports as a kid, but I was mostly just running around all the time playing different games based on what time of year it was, because the weather changed where I grew up. And so I was like, wow, that's neat, because the older people, which are usually less capable, had more ability to do things that they weren't already good at, because they had a nervous system that was built for a lot of different stuff and had been used to a lot of different stimulus. Whereas the people that were probably less likely to play outside because of video games or why ever they were less likely to play outside, but they played organized sports, were kind of maybe good at the movements that were similar to their sport, but they weren't as good, and they had a harder time learning the movements that were not things that were similar to what they were already good at. I just found that really fascinating as a change between the generations and how we live today in the world.
I think you're totally right. I mean, it's just natural where the, you know, the Western world goes, the developed world goes, is basically you know, less physical activity, because you know, we have everything, you know, in our phone. We have you know, enormous amount of entertainment, which basically playing is also entertainment, right? It's just having fun, you know. And now we can have loads of fun without leaving a home, you know. So it's like, unfortunately, a lot less, you know, reasons to be active. So that's I think another thing for everybody to be very mindful about, you know, that this, if you're not, basically, if you're not mindful, if you're not taking steps, you know, in educating the youth, your kids, in going more outside, it's not gonna happen by itself. Because if we leave it just like this by itself, things are just gonna get worse. So
It's true.
that's
Well said.
awesome. So let's get practical. I want to start tomorrow a core training. And what could be, and you mentioned about foundation, you know, the rock being the foundation. What could be the free recommended exercise for the core training?
So I would try a side plank each side. If you have to do it on your knees, that's fine. Even if you have to do it leaning on a kitchen counter, or just doing at a slightly elevated position so your body's on an angle, that's fine. Do it on stairs if you have to, but do a side plank. I would do a front plank. Probably do that for about 10 seconds, 3 sets of 10 seconds rather than one long chunk. And then some kind of glute bridge or supine, which would be face up exercise where you're actually training the backside as well.
All right, that's great. So I'm happy that you've mentioned the planks. Let's get down to business. So We do 21 day plank challenge, and I read your blog post, and I know that you are definitely not an advocate of the long planks, and you just mentioned as well that it's better to do maybe, you know, more frequent like sets of shorter times, because the long planking basically, you know, brings almost no benefits, right? So luckily, I hope we still fit in your theory, because we do in the end, at the end of the challenge, the people do 3 times 1 minute a basic elbow plank, and 3 times each side 40 seconds of the side plank, you know. So okay, we didn't want to go definitely that way of like, you know, by the end of 21 day you're gonna be for 5 minutes, because the time is all about time. We'd rather do shorter but sets instead of so Leron, what's your take on that?
I think it's good to do the variety, to have people do multiple sets, because what happens is the fitness industry overreacts to everything. And we did crunches too much, so now we started planks as an answer to crunches. But if we look at what life is movement. We have to train for it. Life's not the absence of movement. I'm not a subscriber to the belief that in order to train rotation, you train anti-rotation. You don't learn to drive a car by sitting with the car turned off in a parking lot making car noises. It's just not practical. So the idea that we need to move in life, and even when we walk, our core is working. I talked about the posture, and our abs are always working all the time. They're kind of rhythmically working on, off, on, off, on, off to control movement. Rarely are they just on consistently for an extended period of time at the same level of intensity. There's this sort of rhythmic on-off contraction that happens to do most of our physical activities. If we train that way, we're actually training more in line with how our bodies are used and how they move in life. And then the other factor is there's a certain boredom of just sitting still. And there's a problem with isometrics. So doing really long planks leads to misery, because people, number one, don't like exercise as it is. When you do an isometric exercise for a long time, I'm also not a huge fan of wall sits, where you sit against the wall for a long time. Not a huge fan of those either, because they maximize the pain, but they minimize the gain. So what happens when you're doing a long isometric, you're not contracting the muscle, or you're not moving the muscle. You're contracting it, but it's an isometric contraction. You're not moving the muscle. So you're not moving the muscle, you're moving less blood through. When you're moving less blood through, you're clearing out less waste product, which means more waste products are accumulating inside the muscle, which means the muscle's burning more. But because you're not moving the muscle, you're actually doing the least amount of physical work in the true physics sense. So you're burning the least amount of calories, but you're maximizing the burning. So for a lot of people, it's making it feel terrible, but it's giving them less benefit from something that they might want to do. So doing a plank, like for example, the world record now is just over 8 hours. And I talked about that. The blog you mentioned is called Restoring Sanity to Plank. So people can find that if they want to look it up. But there's the first time I ever wrote about planks, the world record was just over 3 hours. I've written about it a few times over the years, and now it's over 8 hours. And think about what you can do in 8 hours versus staying still and doing nothing for 8 hours, which is admittedly hard. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that. Think about it like this. If I'm learning the alphabet, if I'm a kid in school learning the alphabet's hard for me, and then I get good at the alphabet. My goal is to not keep getting better at the alphabet, so that I'm 47 now and I'm just still A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I move on. So I learn the basics and move on. So the plank is really a stepping stone or a foundational exercise to doing other things besides planks. The planks aren't a goal. They're really the start of one. So we have a plank because we need to develop full body stability. Certainly there's a value in teaching us to connect our toes with our shoulders and being able to create that full body stability. But then once we own that full body stability, what do you like to do? What are your activities that you like? What things do you like to do? What sports do you like to play? Go use your better core strength. And even then in the gym and exercising, make planks more interesting too. So after everyone's completed the 21 day challenge, we want to use that strength that they've built. So now you've been able to verify that everybody can do a 1 minute plank, a 40 second side plank. Now what do you do? So now moving beyond that, we don't want to let that strength go. We want to use it to do moving planks. You can shift. So in a plank, you can shift side to side. You can actually rock forward and back through your feet. You can start to lift an arm, lift a leg. You can do little small rotations. You can do planks up on stability balls. You can do planks in a suspension trainer and start getting things moving. Because this shift and try to twist a little bit, and then reduce the base of support by either narrowing the feet or going to a limb lift. There's almost endless options, but there's a few to start exploring.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I had this one idea. Now I lost it. But planks versus crunches. You mentioned already, I think, a couple of times now. Is there, you know, who's the winner? Settle this once and for all.
I say it's a tie. People should do them both, honestly. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be an advocate of telling you to stop doing anything that's valuable. And I can tell you that crunches have some value. Planks have value as well. The challenge is that we overdid crunches. We used too much of them. So that then they became sort of a whipping boy. And the thing about extremism that you'll find, and it's really rampant in fitness, extremism is really rampant in fitness. You'll find people that'll tell you never do this or always do this, or never stretch before you work out, you know, never do crunches, always do this, always do that. And they're usually wrong for all of humanity. They might be right for some people, but they're not going to be right for everyone, because we all have five fingers on our hands, but all of our hands look different. So in the big macro sense, in the big picture perspective, we're all the same. In the specifics, in the micro perspective, we're all very different. So that means what we need and what we're going to benefit from is also very different. So the fact that someone would say never crunch means it's absurd, because how are you going to get out of bed in the morning? Getting out of bed in the morning is sitting up while, oh my God, rotating, which is supposed to be the most dangerous thing. Flexing the spine while rotating the spine is what some people tell you is the most dangerous thing. But I do it every morning to get out of bed and my spine doesn't catch on fire and explode. So the idea that we have to eliminate dangerous movements, I think, is heavily flawed, because life will make us do those movements sometimes. We don't need to overuse them. I'm not an advocate of doing long sets of 200 crunches like we used to do 20 years ago. But I think keeping the ability to do them well keeps us able to do them when life makes us do them without injuring ourselves. If we avoid things that life will at some point make us do because it's dangerous or some scientist says we shouldn't do it, then we're going to wind up setting the stage for an increased likelihood that we will suffer injury or harm later.
Understood. So what could, there was a time, the period of crunches, now it's for time to shine for planks. What's the next one? What's the next big thing in
ab training? It's almost like anthropology. There was a time of dinosaurs and there was a time of man. So there was a time of crunches and then there's a time of planks.
Exactly.
I think that there's going to be probably something that's not great to overly focus on, unfortunately. I mean, in an ideal world, I would say that the idea that we can there would be some standing or upright abdominal exercise that would become popular, but those typically don't lead to enough burning, and people like to feel the muscles burn and they like to get really sore. So what you'll probably find is it'll be something that's kind of on the ground and is easily quantifiable for a contest and a challenge. The good side of planks, I mean, as far as setting up a challenge, they're easy to measure. You're either up for a minute or you're not, right? So then it's easy to measure, and it makes a fun challenge for groups to do. Mm-hmm. So in an ideal world, we'd have some kind of upright exercise where you're using your core as you would in life. But we know fitness is never the ideal world. So I would say it's probably going to be something along the lines of, getting down on the ground. And I'll probably say in another 10 years, sit-ups will make a comeback. It'll probably be some kind of sit-up challenge. It's going to be, because things have a way of going from one pendulum to the other. It always swings from one extreme to the other. So it'll probably make a comeback.
Or like a burpee challenge or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. All right, Jonathan, time is running out, and I'm always saying this. I just realized I always say this at the end of the podcast, because I always too sad to wrap up, but something we have to do. Just before we go, let's do the very quick rapid fire questions round. So are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. So do you prefer tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Are you more of a dog lover or cat lover?
Both. I think they're both awesome pets. I don't have a choice. I don't have a preference, honestly.
All right, that's good. That's also an option. If you would paint anything, what would you paint?
What would I paint? Yeah. Wow, if I could paint anything, I would probably paint a picture of some surface of a planet that we've never seen before. Like I would get a look at it that no one's seen it and we want to know what it looks like, and I'd be able to paint that, because I'm not very good at painting. So I would have something I could paint that no one's seen before too. So I'd be doing two things there. Being able to paint is number one, and number two, being able to show people something they've never seen before.
That's an interesting approach. Yeah. If you don't You know, if you don't know how to paint, which I mean, I don't either, you better paint something and call it, you know, the next big thing, because, you know, art is usually very subjective. Awesome. And a city everybody should visit, in your opinion?
City everybody should visit. Wow, that's a good one. Well, in my experience, I would say Istanbul. Because just for the sheer fascination of it's the only city that exists on two continents. And it's part of it is in Europe, part of it's in Asia. The people were lovely and the food was fantastic. So,
sounds good. I think a great recommendation. And a final question, a purchase under the $100 that vastly benefited you, like, you know, changed your life.
Wow, purchase under $100 that changed my life. I would have to say it would be probably the Body Back Buddy, which is I know it's a goofy sounding name, but it's no, actually, let me go with a different one. Change that. We'll change the answer. The purchase under $100 that changed my life has to be the Funsensity Rubber Chicken, because they're like, you can get a rubber chicken for $7 US, and it just, it's changed my approach to exercise. It's changed what I've seen in people's lives. So it's been a real game changer for me personally in terms of having fun with intensity, but also being able to spread that to the world. So that's been definitely the one that would be my answer for that one, the rubber chicken.
That's great. Simple things, as simple as a rubber chicken can change your life. Awesome. So for those who would like to know more, you know, and maybe shoot you an email or contact you online, what is the best way to do that?
You can find me at funtensity.com, and social media, just at Funtensity would be the social media handle to use. That's kind of everything anybody needs to know. They can contact me through there as well.
Great. So I will definitely put all these links in the show notes. And also for those of you guys watching this on YouTube, I will put that at the very end of this video, so you can just scroll back there. It's time to say a very big thank you for this wide-ranging conversation we had. Thank you. Thank you for your time, Jonathan.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure, and I hope everything we discussed is helpful to anybody that listened to it. That's why we do this, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Hey, guys, thank you so much for sticking around. I hope you learned something new that you could implement today or tomorrow and generally to feel fitter, happier, healthier, and generally more productive. So if you want to find the show notes of this episode, simply go to hustleduo.com/Jonathan. And also make sure to check out all of the 12 body and mind challenges we have currently on the website. So, you know, try something new, learn, develop a new habit, eliminate the bad ones, and just experience something new, people. You need more experience. That will make your life better and happier, trust me. So thank you so much, and I'll catch you later.